Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. One of the terrible fruits of divorce is what happens to the kids. And sometimes the kids suffer not only because of the basic tragedy of divorce, but because we have a system that's grown up an industry around divorce that has almost made an art of parental alienation. And we're going to talk about this with Charlie von Schlesien. Charlie, welcome to Bob Enyart Live.
Thank you, Bob, for bringing us on.
I'm interested in the topic. You know a lot about this. In a few minutes, we'll get Dr. Ray to join us. Could you tell us about Dr. Ray first?
Well, Dr. Ray is a psychologist in the Colorado Springs area here in Colorado, and I believe that we are very blessed to have people that are in these fields. That understands how this parent alienation is destroying many children out there through this family court industry.
All right. So before we do that, we'll be putting a call to Dr. Ray. She's down in Colorado Springs.
Correct.
In a few minutes. But before we do that, tell me about techniques that are used to accomplish this. You have a divorce. There's often intense bitterness, a visceral hatred for someone that ostensibly, you know, the husband or wife once loved, and now they go through a divorce and there's this terrible hatred, and the kids are often pawns used as weapons against the ex.
Exactly. At first, I would like to, I want to go through that list, but I do want to give proper acknowledgement to a number of people that have been out in the field for the past 25 to 30 years that have been doing the body of this research. Mm. And these are names that sometimes are recognized. Dr. Amy Baker is one. There's a Sherry Burton. There's a Dr. Warshak that's out there. And these are people that are well revered, even within the judicial system and the business itself. Mm. So they are making headway slowly, but it is about education. But as far as some of the warning signs, you know, that that do exist, I mean, it's essentially giving a child a choice as to whether or not visit with the other parent, when clearly we know that a child benefits from both parents.
Oh, for Charlie, my wife Cheryl and I, we've both tragically gone through divorce. So we know, you know, quite a bit, way more than we'd ever want to, about divorce. And when the courts say to children, especially young children, but any children, which parent do you want to live with? Do you want to visit your parent? That is one of the most cruel things that adults can do to a child, is ask a child to pick between parents. How common do you think it is that things like that, just that issue, that children are asked to pick whether they want to visit or live with one parent or another?
I think it's far too common. I would say, venture to say, from some of the statistics that have been out there, that it's well over 50% of the divorces that are out there. And, you know, our divorce rate is at 50%. So, you know, just crunch the numbers. I mean,
yeah, we're talking about millions and millions of children. And am I overstating the case that it is absolutely cruel to ask a child, which parent do you want to live with, or do you want to visit mom or dad? Is it cruel? Am I overstating that?
No, you're not. I would even go one step further to say it's grievous, and it's basically unconscionable to put a child essentially in the middle. Hmm. I mean, basically, a child becomes a bad, a pawn in the middle.
Right.
And they do recognize that.
Right. And as kids are young, before they've grown and matured, wisdom and knowledge, understanding, quite often when there's a choice, say a 13-year-old girl who's got a dad and a mom, and say one, the mom or dad will let her go out with boyfriends, sleep over without accountability to her girlfriend's house or boyfriend's house, it's not hard to figure out who the 13-year-old girl is going to pick that she wants to live with. And the parent who is more loving, more wise, less selfish.
Has the boundaries.
Has boundaries. That parent will end up being prejudiced. The court and the guardian ad litem and the whole system.
The business.
The business, the industry, the family court industry will be prejudiced against the parent who cares most for the child. That's pretty common.
Yeah, generally. I mean, there's no question about there. There are times, though, within this particular syndrome of parent and alienation, there are either, and it's not just a father or just a mother. It's not gender biased to a certain extent. But whoever that alienator is, or rather, I'd rather say perpetrator, as it's commonly known, they generally sometimes aren't aware of what they're doing. I mean, there is dissociation because there is so much trauma around what we consider the core of our happiness, which is the family.
The family. Absolutely right. When I was a young guy, guys are sort of dense, I think, Charlie, compared to women. You know, women are born with a marriage manual in their head. They understand kids so much better. I was growing up, I thought, I just don't know why you'd want to have kids, because they drool and they're smelly. And and I had our first child, and Cheryl and I, between us, we have seven boys.
Nice.
Talk about your heart going completely to another human being. When you have children, you realize there is a God in heaven who made us to love our kids. It's just so extraordinary.
Yeah. Well, the
family is the center.
Yeah. Well, the manual is there, Bob, as you know.
The manual's there. So could you give us, and we'll get to Dr. Ray in a moment, could you give us, I keep interrupting you because the topic is so extraordinary.
Oh, it's a huge topic, but, and, you know, again, to try to do this in a half hour is difficult.
Getting kids to choose between mom or dad, that's one.
Yeah. I think another big one is, you know, when one parent, again, the perpetrator, the alienator, is, you know, that parent is blaming the other parent for the financial problems, the breaking up of the family, changes in lifestyle, you know, that is, again, undermining that base for that child. The trust issues are huge at that point.
Yeah, to get the one child to somehow make a commitment that mommy is right and daddy's wrong, or daddy's right and mommy's wrong. Cheryl and I, and it's tragic that we have this story to tell about ourselves, but we both went through a divorce. And we had a rule, Charlie, after we were both previously divorced and met and married and had three kids. We had two boys each to start with. And our rule was we would not speak ill of our spouses.
Exactly.
We would not do that in front of the kids. We wouldn't tell them that our spouses were wrong. We consciously said we're not going to use our kids as a weapon against our exes.
Exactly. Because if you do something like that, basically you are undermining that whole foundation that that child has. That's their world. It's their parents.
Yeah. And so, you know, in the short term, it might look like, hey, this is working. I'm telling my child how bad her mom or dad is, and she's siding with me. But quite often that backfires.
Well, intuitively,
when they get older, they realize, quite often, not always.
Right. Intuitively, they know.
They know. Now, let's go to the phones. Hi, Dr. Ray. Could you please introduce yourself to our audience?
Sure. I'm a licensed psychologist in Colorado, and I work often, unfortunately, with parental alienation. I see it all too often in my practice, and it is every time. It's devastating just to listen to the stories. I've heard so many, although they're all variations on a theme. Mm-hmm. Having done that, I've appeared as expert witness in court, researched a lot of this topic. I've attended practically every conference out there. I'm in the process of writing an article for the American Journal of Family Therapy on this topic. And as a matter of fact, I am an alienated grandparent. That happened about 5 years ago. Until that time, in all of my training, and this I have found is pretty much constant, no one is trained about parental alienation, either in a master's or a doctoral program in psychology.
Right.
And
It's an epidemic that is ignored.
It's an epidemic.
Right.
That's right. It absolutely is. And the reason I became involved was when my son's wife divorced him and threatened him that if he didn't come back to her, she changed her mind and said if he didn't come back to her, she would destroy him. Those four words, I will destroy you, I'm sure that many alienated parents have heard the same phrase. And it carries a powerful punch. So the upshot was that I have not seen my grandchildren in 5 years.
Oh, no.
My son hasn't seen his two daughters in 5 years, except for a very brief period. Hmm. And that is because the hatred of the alienating parent, in this case the mother, was stronger. The hatred for her ex-husband was stronger than her love for her children.
Exactly.
So systematically...
What a perfect way to put
exactly,
that.
Exactly. These alienating parents systematically set out to destroy, dismember. their goal is a parentectomy, that they can actually remove the, quote, offending parent from their children's lives.
Mm. And ultimately, as you know, Dr. Ray, who pays the price? It's the children.
Yeah, the
ultimately, the children suffer, yes.
Right. Now, the parent who's doing this also, of course, whenever you harm another human being, you pay a price because there is a God in heaven. And eventually it all comes out. But the children are the real victims. They're the innocent victims when a marriage crumbles because of unfaithfulness or other incredible selfishness. And then it's taken out on the kids. Part of all this is the fact that we have no-fault divorce. You could cheat on a spouse and go to court, and it's perfectly level playing field. It doesn't matter that you have destroyed the marriage. You still have every shot, if not a better shot, at getting custody of the kids.
You're absolutely correct.
Yeah, we've seen it. I've gone to court a number of times with friends, church members, relatives of church members. We're so thankful. Our church has the most extraordinary families at Denver Bible Church. But being on the radio for 20 years, I've seen it over and over again. The parent who's been home and faithful takes the kids to Sunday school, and the other parent who's a drunkard, having affairs, staying out all night, and the court finds a way to give the kids to the parent who destroyed the marriage and is an adulterer.
Absolutely true. Aided and abetted often by Department of Human Services.
And how so? How would that be? We've seen that, but Dr. Ray, how would that be?
That generally occurs when there is a false accusation leveled at the targeted parent of abuse on the child. It doesn't have to be substantiated. It just has to be alleged. And at that time, the alienating parent, either the mother or the father, and it's usually 50-50, manages to be, she actually acquires victim status at that time, and the entire system cranks into motion, making sure that, you know, she can have whatever she wants, putting every restriction on the other parent, whether it be the father or the mother, and effectively closing them out of the children's lives.
Yeah.
DHS generally gets involved because they have to at least investigate this kind of allegation, and doesn't go well.
Now, Dr. Ray and Charlie, I'm not saying that there's never a time when children need to be protected against a parent. Of course there are times, especially child molestation and severe child abuse. But our system doesn't know right from wrong.
It has to be proved beyond a reasonable doubt.
That's a great point. But the system inherently, it doesn't know right from wrong. It thinks that marriage, you can break marriage unlike any other contract. You could break a marriage contract with no consequence, even though it's the most important contract. It thinks that adultery is perfectly acceptable. And so the system doesn't know right from wrong, which means it tends to side with evil. And so when they come in as the arbiters and they decide what's best for this child, they don't have a compass, moral compass.
Well, correct. But if I can correct you, I apologize,
yeah,
both. No. But I consider marriage a covenant. And,
yeah,
you know, and again, with a covenant
I agree
like
with you.
Okay, with a covenant like that, again, our judicial system really, in my opinion, okay, does have not does not have business being involved in that. But
well, again, now that's a fascinating topic, and we should do that on another show.
Exactly. Okay. You know, and that's one thing that I would love to combine that with. And again, I think some of the different groups, again, it's not only the fathers that are being alienated. There are mothers, excuse me, without going into a personal situation. But I haven't had my child in my life in 3.5 years.
Oh,
and,
I'm so sorry, Charlie.
And, excuse me. And it, you know, it's, again, it's not, the statutes that are there, even just in the state of Colorado, there's a statute 1410.124, which is for the best interest of the children, which are supposed to encourage frequent and continued, visitation with the child and a parent. Generally, of course, the statutes don't necessarily mirror Constitution, our U.S. Constitution, nor our state constitution. But like I said, that is a new subject, but I think most of the people that are pursuing these challenges within the judicial industry, family court industry, really have to start looking at it from the point of constitutional law.
Mm. So, Dr. Ray, could you take this conversation further? You've said that in your practice, you've seen this parental alienation repeatedly, that it's variations on a theme.
This is true. I'd like to just comment briefly on Charlie's reference to the industry. It is indeed an industry. It's been called various names, but it is essentially, it's the divorce industry.
Well, and it's like the
therapists get wealthy, lawyers get wealthy.
Right, judges.
There are all kinds of therapists.
And Dr. Ray, the judges get wealthy.
Oh, they do.
They
and
get
they also
excellent
want to stay
pension
in office.
Plans and health insurance and paychecks. Right, absolutely. So it's just like the DUI industry is an industry, so too is the divorce court. That whole family court is a great, great tragedy.
It is. And as far as commenting on what I've seen in my practice, I've seen the gamut from mild alienation, which generally is fairly easily cured, if you can use the word cured, by merely pointing out the fallacy, you know, pointing out what is happening when a parent disparages or badmouths another parent, and they don't realize what they're doing, and they do indeed have the best interest of the children at heart. They can usually respond and not continue to offend. Then there's the moderate parental alienation, where one parent, an example of that, one parent will have the kid spy on the other parent. He has a fact-finding mission during visitation. Come back and tell me, how much did your father pay for his new car? Who's living there? What's going on? That type of information. And that's not, again, it sets the child up in a very difficult position. And then there's the severe alienation. Thank goodness they're not quite as frequent, but when they occur, they generally result in an absolute cessation of visitation between the child and the targeted parent. I have several cases at the moment. I've consulted on cases across the country. This is not merely a national phenomenon. It occurs with regularity, unfortunately, across most of the developed world. There's a lot of literature out there on it. And I recently attended a conference in Canada where the judges, there was a landmark decision, the Turnbull decision, a couple of years ago, where the judge recognized the alienating behavior, removed the children from the alienating parent, and placed them with the targeted parent. Mm. This has happened 2 or 3 times after that. And it occurs on a very isolated basis in the United States. Mm. And unfortunately, we don't yet have a groundswell movement. We've started to have one. There's great people working in this area, like Amy Baker. There are national conferences now. People are becoming more aware of this, that there is a name for it. So, something is being done. Incidentally, I train mental health professionals in parental alienation. I have a PowerPoint presentation I do. And just about everyone has not heard the term parental alienation or has not put it in context, but everyone has a story about a friend or a relative that has had this happen to them. So it's a very common occurrence. It's just not well recognized by the courts. And I think the reason for this is there is, in my view, there are two points of view. There there is a tendency of one of the organizations that works closely with the courts, and that's the American Federation of Conciliatory Courts. They subscribe to the Kelly-Johnson reformulated model, which in essence says where there's smoke, there's fire. So something must be going on. In other words, there's never such a – there's never
– a false accusation.
There's always fault on both sides.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Ray, in Lansing, Michigan, I get back there to do Bible seminars now and then. A Christian church, beautiful family, beautiful kids, and the marriage starts to fall apart. And the one spouse is going to bars and drinking, staying out all night, pattern of behavior for months. So the other spouse goes to the pastor and says, I need to get a divorce. What do I do? He says, well, go to Christian attorney so-and-so in our church. He's a wonderful Christian attorney. So the spouse makes an appointment to go to the attorney. As this spouse, I'm not saying a guy or a woman, this spouse is walking in, sees the other spouse walking out. The Christian attorney just took the other spouse's case, and out of the blue, they charged this spouse with claims of child abuse that had never been uttered ever anywhere. It's apparently fabricated for the goal of getting custody. And this is a Christian attorney who takes the case of the spouse who's now sleeping around, drinking, not home, and charges child abuse against the targeted spouse.
Well, I'd have to question just how Christian is this Christian attorney? Where are his ethical guidelines? I mean, we all know that there are good attorneys and there are attorneys that will push the limits.
Well, wait, you said we all know that there are good attorneys. Now, that's something we could
debate.
That's
an oxymoron.
That's something we could debate. Now, there are some good attorneys. I'm sure we could find one or two. But Christian attorneys, quite often, it's a tragedy. They take the client, whoever comes to them, that's their client.
It's a free.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Well, it's a feeding frenzy, Dr. Ray, right now. They all know there's lots of profit out there. So they're all wanting a piece of that so-called profit pie.
Yeah, when the marriages are destroyed, then all of a sudden storage facilities, the storage business booms because people are sell their homes. And the divorce attorneys, and we haven't used, you mentioned this before we went on the air, Charlie, but a guardian ad litem, you pay this professional supposedly a lot of money to do research, and either it's not even done, or it's so biased, or it's so childish, it's startling, the incompetence within supposedly Child Protective Services.
Yeah, well, that basically is called a CFI, which is a court family investigator. And then the guardian ad litem, the GAL as it's referred to, is usually there to protect the children. But again, it's just an industry. It's reports. It's about cha-ching. And like you said, there's so many biases that go with it.
Yeah.
And convoluted information that goes.
Right. Well, I'll give you an example. Dr. Ray, in one case, Christian family, the Christian parent who takes the kids to Sunday school and church, and the other parent who doesn't go to church, the court is biased against the Christian parent, with that information. The guardian ad litem interviews the children in the presence of the parent who doesn't go to church, but the Christian parent takes the kids away from the parent to do the interview. So obviously, in front of mom or dad, you're not going to say bad things about mom or dad. So the guardian ad litem knows exactly what they're doing to manipulate the results, the questions, to be biased against the Christian family. I've seen that over and over.
Okay. And yeah, absolutely right. The guardian ad litem is appointed if one is needed. And quite often they're biased. They really are. If they've been in this business quite a while, they quite often align with the Department of Human Services. Although, I must say, I've worked with some excellent GALs, guardian ad litems, in other areas, and some of them are very good. I've also worked with a couple of really good attorneys that care, although they do hire out to whoever knocks on their door first.
Right.
And they are not known for their as I say, usually for their moral stance. It's just a question of, you know, who pays them, and they'll get the job done, and they are representing that person. It really doesn't set well for someone who has Christian beliefs, because the courts now, that used to be possibly a something in your favor.
Right.
Because it indicated stability.
Stability,
anymore,
you bring the kids to church, you bring them.
Yeah.
If you're bringing them to Hebrew school at the synagogue, stability, respect for a creator God today, I do believe that counts against you.
Well, the cultural norms have changed in the judicial system.
True.
Okay, bottom line.
Hmm.
And the courts reflect that. That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
Right.
So you can't, you know, essentially, if you're a Christian, prayer is your best weapon.
Right, right.
You cannot necessarily expect to present your case, you know, in an honest manner and rely on
and have the
what
truth,
you believe
and,
should be, you know, to have
right.
the truth come out.
The truth and what's best for the children. So I advise parents in this situation, don't go in and say, we bring the kids to church every Sunday. We go to Sunday school. We pray with them before they go to bed. Just don't say that. Just leave all that out, because that will
right.
be you'll be biased against you.
Yeah.
Well, I'll put you may not be biased. It may not be biased against you, but it's certainly not going to win you any points, I don't think.
Right. Dr. Ray, you did mention about how you are in the position of course, educating, and you're helping many a child and, again, the alienated parent. I was hoping that you might share your contact. So those that are listening, if
yes.
they're looking for a source for you to share this, because also, again, how I got to know you was through Philip Hendricks, which is one of the founders of the Coalition for Equal Parenting here in Colorado.
And that would be great, because we are about out of time. We have 30 seconds.
Yes,
so,
please.
Charlie, perfect. Dr. Ray, how do people reach you?
They can reach me at JUDICRAY at MSN.com or area 719-291-7156. But I can also recommend Covenant Counselors in Castle Rock. And I just temporarily lost their phone number, but Covenant Counselors.
Covenant Counselors in Castle Rock.
In Castle Rock, which is Philip Hendricks' firm.
And Philip Hendricks, last time I saw him was on Monday, had to do with the whole Tom Tancredo situation.
Okay,
thank you, ladies.
And he can do an awesome job for anybody that has questions.
God bless you, ladies.